Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Good morning. It is 7 minutes after 6 o'clock. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. Well, that old Sam Cooke starts, the Sam Cooke song starts, Don't Know Much About History. And unfortunately, in today's America, that's not a romantic ballad. It is an accurate description of the state of affairs concerning the education or lack of education of America's young people. Most fourth graders don't know who Abraham Lincoln was. Most high school seniors don't know that we fought against North Korea and its ally China in the Korean War. And only 2% of those high school seniors correctly answered a question about Brown versus the Board of Education, which was arguably the most important Supreme Court decision of the past 100 years. What's even more shocking, those results are actually an improvement over how America's young people fared on a similar history test 5 years ago. If our children don't know about history and don't know what it means to be an American, what is the future of our country? How can we count on them to cast intelligent votes on Election Day and be stewards of our democracy? Our guest for the next hour has written passionately about this subject. He is Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau. As always, we will be taking your comments and questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That Sam Cooke song, Don't Know Much About History, and as a professor of history, that's something you deal with every day.
Absolutely, Glenn. It's a pleasure to be here, but on kind of a disturbing topic. There's no question that I think, to start out with, everyone out there, I think, would agree on the importance of young people understanding the nation's history and understanding really not only what happened, but the causes, interpretations of it, and have a basic grounding to be a good citizen in this democracy.
Let's talk about this test. What was it? Who did it measure? Yeah. And can we trust the results?
Well, now that's one thing. You know, I think that, you know, this comes out of a New York Times article about a week ago. We don't know. The article itself didn't explain what each of the questions were. So indeed, I wonder when they say that they got a question wrong about Abraham Lincoln and his importance. It'd been interesting to see the exact question, because I suppose we all could write a confusing question. But that said, there's no question that there are deficits in basic knowledge about sort of the American past. And, you know, I'm a historian, so I'm probably biased in this, but I think that there's no way you can really understand today's nation and today's democracy without understanding how we got here from the past.
This is the nation's report card, and it's the 2010 National Assessment of Educational Progress.
Right.
And apparently they did a similar test 5 years ago, and it was even worse.
Right, the NAEP scores. There was improvement in the eighth grade. I think some of the other results are pretty similar. I think that sort of low scores on this test have been endemic for a long time now. So it's certainly nothing new in a way.
Well, I've got a few sample questions, yeah. And you're right. We don't have the question about Abraham Lincoln mm-hmm. in front of us. But here's one. At the 1787 Constitutional Convention, Northern and Southern delegates debated whether or not slaves would be counted as part of this state's population. Disagreement over this question led to bitter tensions among delegates. To resolve the question referred to in the passage, delegates agreed to. And then you have four choices. Mm-hmm. A, include all male slaves in population totals. B, include no slaves in population totals. C, count each slave as 3/5 of a person. Or D, count slaves in the southern states but not in the northern states. The
right.
3/5 rule is an important part of
that
American
would be,
history.
Certainly, I teach the U.S. survey here at Marathon County, and I would expect a student coming out of that course to be able to tell what the 3/5 compromise was and why it was important in the nation's history. So,
and what's disturbing to me is this is a multiple choice test.
Correct, yeah.
It's not like the student had to write the answer down from memory. You've got the four choices, including the right one,
mm-hmm.
right in front of you.
Right. So, I mean, that's typical. The NAEP test, the NAEP test, has been one that has, I don't think, asked really complicated questions in a way, but that students have done really poorly on. And it's very difficult to see a real turnaround. I'd be very surprised by a dramatic turnaround in 5 years once it's administered again.
What do you think is the reason? And there are probably multiple reasons. Well, we can't just put our finger on one of them.
There really are. I mean, I think that there are a lot of reasons out there. I think one thing that we're facing is history is a topic that if it's not taught engagingly, if it's not taught in a way that students feel that is relevant to their life, they don't tend to pay much attention. They don't pay. I think with young people, it's particularly difficult. I think that a lot of listeners out there will understand that as people grow older, they tend to gain an appreciation for history. And I think whether that's on the family level, whether it's just sort of when you were younger, you didn't listen to things that your stories that your parents and grandparents told, and then later on you say, well, I wish I'd listened more closely. Or if it's just as people get older, they begin to be more interested in American history.
Well, maybe it's because maybe it's because when you get older, your memories from childhood are suddenly American history.
And you have a better sense. You know, when I took the survey class as a freshman in college, I remember the professor telling us, you know, you're a good bunch of students, but the truth is 18-year-olds are not as good at doing history because you think, for instance, that 10 years is a long period of time. He said, wait till you get to be my age. You won't think 10 years is that long anymore. And I think that when we're talking about, you know, that question you just read is about something that happened more than 200 years ago. Well, for a young kid, that's an impossibly long time ago. But as someone grows older, they realize that that's not an infinite amount of time ago, but that it is a reasonable amount of time in the past, and it might be relevant.
Some critics are pointing to the No Child Left Behind Act, which really emphasizes reading and math. And they say teachers are teaching to those tests. They're teaching for reading and math, and everything else is kind of going out the window.
I do think that's part of the problem. There is no social studies benchmark for No Child Left Behind, and therefore you have to remember that program theoretically can penalize school districts that don't do well. And there are administrators out there who, in the reality of today's sort of funding climate, say, look, we're going to be judged on English and math. And so I want teachers spending time. You know, I participated in a Teach American History grant, which is a national grant that helps to improve teaching in K-12. And some of my colleagues in certain states, I'm glad to say I've never heard about this in Wisconsin, really had trouble getting administrators to buy into this program that would improve social studies education because they said, well, where's the payoff? If this were math or English, I would be on board, but I don't want to spend resources. I want to take teachers out of the classroom to learn about social studies so they can do a better job there when what really matters is math and English. That's a problem. I mean, I think that there are several topics, subjects where, yes, I wish we had benchmarks so that people were also held accountable for students' knowledge in those areas as well.
Everything matters.
Yes, absolutely.
History matters. Physics matters.
Chemistry, science,
geology, geography.
I don't believe there are elementary benchmarks in science either, and so that could be a potential problem as well.
You know, and an understanding of the political system, the criminal justice system, an understanding of philosophy, religion, the history of religion, all of that is important for individual people. When they get out into the world, you have to interact with other human beings, get a job, and understand something about this world around us.
Absolutely.
Now, why is America doing so poorly when other countries, notably the Chinese and the Japanese, seem to be putting a much greater priority on this? And believe me, I don't think Chinese kids are able to say, this just isn't relevant to my lifestyle.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I'm not sure they're doing much better in the areas of history. I mean, I know that they're outperforming in math. I mean, that's one that traditionally comes up. But the truth is, I would question really strongly how accurately history is being taught in Chinese schools today. I mean, I think that's a complex political issue. American students, one thing, and again, this is, I mean, we all agree that this is something we wish people were doing, students were doing better on. It's also not a new problem. There have been reports like this from time to time that have been coming on for nearly a century, where people have been decrying the lack of basic knowledge of the nation's past. And I think some of those causes go very deep, go way beyond No Child Left Behind, and go to things like, you know, another major problem, I think, is reading. We are largely becoming a culture that doesn't read as much as it once did. And I think that one of the ways that you gain knowledge of history is through reading. And, you know, that report had one question that had to do with Brown versus the Board of Education. And it asked them to read text from that decision. And then students sort of botched what the meaning of that text was, that it was about separate but equal and racial discrimination. I think that's as much a problem, perhaps, of reading comprehension as it is historical comprehension, because if you can't read accurately and get the main ideas, how are you going to gain knowledge in something like history? And that's another long-term problem I think we need to address.
Well, Brett Barker, you've tried some things out in the classroom, mm-hmm. and we're going to get into that a little bit later in the program. We've also got some people lining up to contribute, and I'm going to get to your phone calls right after this break that we're about to take. Our guest this morning on the Ideas Network, Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau. We do invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also read Brett Barker's piece on the need to change teaching methods for American history. It's on our website, wpr.org. Showers and scattered thunderstorms in western and northeastern Wisconsin today. Fog near Lake Michigan. Highs from the upper 50s in the northwest to the lower 70s in the southeast. Cooler near the Great Lakes. Showers with fog in northeastern and northern Wisconsin tonight, with a low from the upper 40s in the northwest to about 60 in the far east. And Thursday, showers likely with highs from the upper 50s in northwestern Wisconsin to the mid-60s in the east. Cooler near Lake Superior. Right now we've got 48 degrees. It is overcast in Superior, overcast in 64 in Eau Claire, overcast in 59 in Wausau, 63 degrees in Green Bay, 68 in La Crosse, 69 in Madison, 65 and mostly cloudy in Milwaukee. I'm Glenn Moberg, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Don't know much about history.
Well, that's certainly appropriate. We're doing a show on history, and we hear a spot from the Wisconsin Historical Society in the last part of our break. It's 20 minutes after 6 o'clock. I'm Glenn Moberg, in for Joy Cardine. We are talking about the abysmal report card on history and the knowledge of history by America's youth, with Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County. I want to remind you that in our 8 o'clock hour, Barry Estabrook, author of Tomato Land, will be talking about how he believes modern industrial agriculture has destroyed our most alluring fruit. And then at 7 o'clock, we have two guests from opposite sides of the political spectrum debating today's big question, should we raise taxes on the rich? But I want to get to some phone calls right away. Boyd in Milwaukee has been waiting patiently. Boyd, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Hi, good morning, Glenn. Hello to your guest.
Good morning.
I want to say he is a man after my own heart. There's so many things I could go with this, but as I told the screener, I think George Orwell had that very famous saying, he who controls the past controls the present, he who controls the present controls the future. And why I think that's relevant to this discussion is I just feel, you know, when you mentioned the earlier part of the show, how without the knowledge of history and what have you and other topics, how are net future generations going to make decisions at the voting box and things like that? And unfortunately, I think it's led to an overall dumbing down of this country. And you're seeing it with how either voter turnout is low, they don't see the importance of actively engaging in the democratic process, or they're very misinformed on the whole process, the functions of our government, and really where the candidates, you know, stand on. And, you know, not just, I don't think, is history a problem, just two other points is, well, with history, a lot of times how it's taught is, at least in the high school level, it's names and dates. There's never anything of the economic causes, whether it's the war between the states, the American Revolution, and, like, could the American Revolution been avoided altogether by a peaceful process? And I think also just besides history, you have to throw geography there in too. It's alarming when I see here that a lot of, you know, high school students can't find the United States on a world map. Sometimes they've pointed to Brazil, and even in some cases, when they've looked at the United States map, they don't know where Florida is. I wish I could say I'm exaggerating, but unfortunately I'm not. And
Boyd, you've given us a lot to chew on here, and I'm going to give Brett Barker a chance to respond.
Boyd, I think you make some good points. I mean, first of all, I would agree completely that, you know, good people can disagree on issues of the day, but they need to have a basic framework and a basic sort of understanding of what the issues are and the historical background of those issues. I think that's absolutely essential to having a healthy democracy and having really a robust debate about the issues that we all care about. And I do worry about that. I think that the names and dates, you also mentioned that sort of history is sometimes presented as a lot of names and dates. And, you know, frankly, when it is presented that way, well, no wonder it bores people to death, right? I mean, if you simply are asked to memorize a group of names and dates that seem to have no relevance and no meaning, frankly, it's like trying to memorize numbers out of the telephone book. It would be the same sort of level of competency.
Right? I remember having some professors in college and high school, you know, and in high school you're kind of captive, but in college at least you can decide not to take their courses, people who would have that rote memorization without getting into the significance. Tony on Facebook writes, one of the reasons students do poorly is because so much of the history taught in schools is not true history, it's revisionist propaganda. Also, they spend months on topics like the Revolutionary and Civil Wars, yet practically skip over the World Wars, Vietnam, and more recent conflicts and issues, topics that have much more relevance to and impact upon today's youth and society. Are our history books, particularly at a high school level, kind of a problem because, you know, you've got boards of education in Texas and other places kind of deciding the curriculum for the entire nation based on political concerns?
Well, there are two problems there. First of all, there is an issue of when politics gets involved in curriculum, particularly at the K-12 level. That's one issue that I think can be a problem where, you know, particularly the sort of unfortunate side of the American past is downplayed or not made, you know, not included even. You know, I think a second problem with history before the college level is really the question that there are things that you just there are things that I wouldn't present to a fourth grader, frankly. Some really troubling parts of the American past. But I think that before K-12, I think a lot of controversial, history involves a lot of, involves violence and involves sex and alcohol and sort of all the sort of things that the human condition includes, and
all the kinds of things that would make kids interested in the subject but would scare the adults who sit on those boards of education.
Do you want to publish a textbook that has something controversial and then they won't adopt your textbook? And so what it led to is sort of the blanding of textbooks that are really sometimes that's a real handicap that a teacher starts out with, is the text is not engaging.
How about these reports of the extremes that we've gone to where, again, the Texas Board of Education wanted to minimize Thomas Jefferson's role in American history because some of the people on that board apparently, according to reports, didn't like the things that he believed in and said.
Right. Yeah, the author of the Declaration of Independence, I think usually he's seen as somebody who had ideas that were sort of central to the American experience, but that's not universally thought of. And I think the problem is, both sides accuse the other of revisionism. The truth is that what we need is an engaged debate using evidence. And I think one of the things we're saying is, how can we have an engaged debate if the people involved in the debate don't have the evidence? So what I would say is, while I don't think it's a good idea to have students rote memorize names and dates, you also have to know facts. And another thing that I find with some students is a problem is we live in a world in which they believe that there's no need to know any factual information because one can just Google it or can look it up on Wikipedia. And
you can't always trust what you get on the internet, can you?
And frankly, you can't. You need to retain a certain amount. Now, it's complicated to think about what we need to know. Part of the thing is about this whole problem is it's easy to say students ought to know history, but then what does that mean?
We want to go to Victor in West Milwaukee right now. Victor, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests. Another concern I have is when you have minorities like Asian Americans, Black Americans, Latino Americans, these groups are still being omitted from history. They're relegated to almost a footnote status. And I've seen some marked improvements since I've been in school since the 60s and 70s. But it still has a long ways to go. For instance, how many people know about Juneteenth Day? That's a major historical moment in this society. I've had to even remind people at my school, to celebrate Juneteenth Day. I'm in a college. And nobody knows anything about that.
Victor, are you a teacher?
No, I'm just a concerned citizen. I feel as though it's my duty to bring it up to their attention, because especially the Black students, because that's a major historical note. And I'd like to also include the other minorities as well. I think one it is if you address the minority students, you know, you're assuming that most of these are white students that you're talking about. How is history relevant to them? The only thing they see is how oppressive the society has been. You know, let's face a fact, the society, along with its good, has still been oppressive. But let's have all the facts together so they can think for themselves and interpret history. See, that's the other key, too, is when you read, are you thinking for yourself? Or, again, like what you all alluded to, are you going through this propaganda and this revisionist theory, just like, you know, when they practice in Japan and China?
All right, Victor, yep. Thanks so much for the phone call. We really appreciate it. I want to give Brett a chance to respond.
Victor,
you got to be kind of quick because we're going into a news
Victor, break. I agree with you completely. You know, I have a list here of things that serve remedies, and one of the things I have is history should be about all of us, and I think you're absolutely right. History needs to be not only about all the races that this country is composed of, but about men and women, about poor and rich, about all different religious backgrounds. And you're right, to engage most students, you need to tell the history of all Americans in the past. I agree completely.
And how can you make history relevant to African Americans if you don't include their history and their part in this country? How many people know that it was African Americans who built the White House?
Right, and it has to be integral too. I think that it has to be not just something that's added in as an additional feature, but you have to really make these people a central part of the American story.
And these people were a central part
Absolutely.
Of the American story. So if they're not in our history books, those history books, as Victor said, aren't an accurate reflection of the history
Absolutely.
Of this country.
Yep.
Our guest this hour, Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau, talking about a poor report card for America's young people on the subject of U.S. history. Coming up next, we check the news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, but we'll be back with more of your questions, comments, and phone calls right after the news. I'm Glenn Moberg, in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much about.
It's 6:36. I'm Glenn Moberg in for Joy Cardine. We're talking with Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau, on new test results that give a flunking grade to America's young people on the subject of U.S. history. Does this concern you? Do you think this is a threat to the future of our democracy? And if so, what can we do to reverse the trend? You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. We do have phone lines open for you right now. You can send an email to talk@wpr.org, or you can leave your comments on the Facebook page for the Joy Cardine Show. And I want to go right back to the phones, I think, to start off this segment. Let's go to Charlie in Superior, who's been waiting patiently. Charlie, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Hello. I don't know what things are like in the public schools nowadays, but if it parallels the way PBS and NPR and some of the other networks like the National Geographic Network and the History Network do things, I can understand why students are shunning history. There is just way too much political correctness nowadays. Give you an example, the multiple choice question that you read at the top of the show. The correct answer was supposedly number C, which says that each slave is counted as 3/5 of a person. Yet if you actually read the Constitution itself, what it says is that 3/5 of the slaves shall be counted in the state's population. So nowadays, the politically correct people insist on that little spin there. A few nights ago, I was watching a documentary about Abraham Lincoln on PBS, and I had to chuckle at how different the presentation is now compared to what it was when I was in school, because now Mary Todd Lincoln is depicted as having had major policy decision-making role during the Civil War, whereas she was barely mentioned as a historic person other than as, you know, trivially being married to the president. But now somebody has made the decision that we have to focus on women. And so we do. And when I was watching the documentary, I couldn't see a shred of evidence that some new discovery has been made.
Charlie, thanks so much for the phone call. You've got a different perspective from the other callers, and you know, Charlie's point is political correctness, revisionism.
I'm not sure I understood his distinction in the first case. I mean,
maybe human human beings are writing our history books,
right.
And a bias is going to come in one way or the other.
Well, and I don't know. I mean, first of all, I didn't see the special that involved Mary Todd Lincoln. I don't think any sort of major academic historian would argue that she played a large role in policymaking during the Civil War. She was an important part of Abraham Lincoln's life, and there's no question that she was important in that way. I think that sometimes too much is made of political correctness, to be honest. I mean, I think that some people bristle when we do include people who previously weren't included in the story of the American past. And I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I think that there. One thing I would say is it's important to include, as Victor said earlier, it's important to include the story of everyone in the American past. We should never confuse that with the idea that everyone had equal power in the past. And I think that, you know, I think that that is the truth, is that some people are more powerful in the past than others, and that's the reality, and therefore they will be paid attention to for that reason.
Charlie, thanks so much for the phone call. And Nathaniel on Facebook writes, I think there is a certain degree of time limitation at fault here. There's just not enough time to teach all of U.S. history. Many high school classes end around World War II.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think the problem is, you know, they keep making more history every year, right? I mean, there is more to cover. And the earlier comment about the earlier person said, well, you know, they spend so much time in the American Revolution, the Civil War. I think that that's not that they're trying to spend more thinking that the American Revolution and the Civil War are more important, although I'd argue they're as important as the World Wars and sort of understanding the American past, but that teachers try to spend the time it takes to get students to comprehend the material, and sometimes that takes time and slows them down. They don't get to the present.
Now, your area of expertise is early American history, going up to the Civil War, and you write on your blog, and again, you can access Brett Barker's views on how to make teaching of history relevant on our website, WPR.org. But Brett Barker, you struggled with your own students who you thought weren't grasping basic historical trends, concepts, and facts, and you did change how you approach the classroom. Tell us about that.
Well, absolutely. I think that it really comes down to engagement. You know, the model I've got in college was often that I would sit in a room and a very learned and sometimes a very engaging professor would lecture to us about the past. And, you know, I thrived in that environment. Maybe that's why I ended up being a history professor. But some students don't. And so over time, I've come to try to engage students more in the classroom and make them more a part of the learning process. Because frankly, some people, if you just sit, and I think we all know that if you just hear something, it's not the same as actually engaging and participating. I could talk to you all day about how to ride a bicycle, but the way to learn to ride a bicycle is actually go do it.
So you were teaching a course on Jacksonian democracy, which was around, what,
1830s, 1830s? 30s, 40s, 20s, 30s,
40s. And you had your kids role play.
Correct.
Tell me about the different roles that you had the individual students
play. So what I did was I basically took the chapter in the book, and then I still do this. As a matter of fact, people who survived History 101 at Marathon County this semester did it this semester. And they take different parts of the past. So I had people who were investing in railroads and the transportation revolution. Also had people who were farmers, different groups in American society. Asked them to explain what the world looked like from those people's point of view, and they really had to know the material and share it with others instead of just sort of listening to the material.
So you had industrialists building the railroads.
Yes.
You had farmers. Did you cover the preachers?
And that's right. There's also the religious. There's a huge religious revival going on at the time, so that's a group. There are also the workers in those factories who obviously have a different viewpoint on early industrialization than the people who owned the factory.
We had the beginning of the labor movement starting.
And so that multiple perspective idea.
How about progressive thinkers of the time like Ralph Waldo Emerson?
That's correct.
Henry David Thoreau, the Transcendentalists?
That's right. So Transcendentalists are another. They're covered in the chapter, and I find that students really struggle sometimes with philosophical thought. And so, You know, if you really want to have, it's different to try to think you understand what Emerson thought, but if you have to be Emerson, you have to know him on a different level or Thoreau than you'd have to a Margaret Fuller than if you just read a book on him and said, okay, I'll take a test on
him. So how did your students respond to that? Were there actual confrontations in the classroom? Did they kind of really get into the roles?
Right. Well, I ask them, you know, be respectful. I mean, I don't want to fist fight, break out in class, but I think that, you know, oftentimes there are real exchanges where people take on this persona and they understand the point of view and they try to express that with other people, and they had real debates about, you know, the way that industrialization was going or the role of religion in society, and they became more a part of the process. I think the way to learn history is to do history.
And what was the end result of that? Did they improve their test scores? Did they show that they had a better grasp of the material?
I always find that students coming out of that do wonderfully on the information about the group that they portray. You know, they really come to own that and really come to be a part of that in a way that sometimes the other parts of the course, they don't seem to have the same level of mastery. So I think that engagement is a key to sort of mastering material.
Let's go back to the phones. George in Milwaukee, you're on with Brett Barker on the Joy Cardine Show.
Yeah, good morning. Sounds like you'd be a good history professor.
Thank you.
I think that one of the things that you said earlier about remembering the importance of dates and facts needs to be stressed. I'm often perplexed at people's inability or just lack of knowledge regarding dates, and I kind of look at dates and chronology as being so important to understanding history. They're kind of little hooks that then you can if you know them, not that they should be taught completely separate from context, but if you don't know those little hooks and where things happen, you really don't understand causation at all in history and why something happened and why there may be a reaction later on.
Maybe we need to concentrate on those facts. We kind of put down history professors who just did a rote memorization of dates and events. But I think what George is saying, you know, we live too often in this world in a fact-free universe.
It's always a balancing act. You have to know facts, and then you have to know what the facts mean. So just happening to know that, you know, Franklin Pierce was the 14th president in itself isn't useful. But if you know when he lived and what, you know, what his relevance was, or I picked a pretty obscure one there, but you know, if it is always a balancing act. You need to have facts to make your arguments and to explain the past.
One of my biggest frustrations as a journalist is dealing with people who don't understand the difference between facts and opinion.
Yes.
And often you run into people who simply think that facts don't matter.
Yeah, or that all facts are equally, you know, sort of an opinion, all opinions are equally sort of valid when making historical arguments. Well, no, it's the quality of the evidence you can bring to bear, and that's exactly what his point was, I think. You need to have evidence to make historical arguments.
George, thanks so much for the phone call. Our guest this morning on the Ideas Network, Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau. You've still got time to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org, or you can leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tonight at 7 here on the Ideas Network, we bring you an NPR news special coverage of President Obama's address to the nation regarding troop levels in Afghanistan. That's an NPR news special coverage of President Obama's address to the nation on troop levels in Afghanistan tonight at 7. It's here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's hit our forecast. Showers and scattered thunderstorms in western and northeastern Wisconsin. Fog near Lake Michigan. Highs from the upper 50s in the northwest to the lower 70s in the southeast. Cooler near the Great Lakes. Showers with fog in the northeastern and northern Wisconsin areas tonight, with lows from the upper 40s in the northwest to about 60 in the far east. We've got 48 degrees and rain right now in Superior. 64 overcast in Eau Claire. 60 in Wausau. 64 in Green Bay. 68 in La Crosse. 69 in Madison. 66 degrees and mostly cloudy in Milwaukee. I'm Glenn Moberg, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
It's 6:49. I'm Glenn Moberg, in for Joy Cardine. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller talks about the wonderful world. No pun intended, that's the title of that Sam Cooke song. The wonderful world of insects with entomologist Phil Pelletieri. Right now, Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau, on the Poor Report Card for America's Young People on our country's history. And let's go to Matt in Oshkosh. Matt, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Good morning. Glenn, you're doing a nice job. I really enjoy your hosting of the show. I wanted to go back to political correctness. I don't think political correctness is the sole cause of the degradation of teaching of history. But what happens is history is really, when you get down to its essence, a reporting of the facts. And political correctness comes in when someone is uncomfortable or does not like the facts. And that's as simple as I can boil it down to. That's why it gets pointed at as one of the main causes of poor teaching of history.
Matt, thanks so much for the phone call, Brett.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we just talked in the last segment about the importance of facts, and a lot of what history is, though, is interpretation. The truth is that there aren't a lot of real facts. I mean, there are facts in history, right? I can tell you that the date of battle occurred, or the years that a president was in office, or the date of the Seneca Falls Convention, right? I can give you the dates of certain things that happened. I can tell you how many people, to our best estimate, died in a battle. But sort of the meaning of that battle is all a matter of interpretation. And so partly what we do is we inquire about the past. History comes from a Greek word that means inquiry. And so what we're really doing is inquiring and trying to understand the past, and giving it meaning is always complicated, and those interpretations sometimes do lead to debate. But I think a healthy debate based on evidence is always a good thing for democracy to have about its past and its present and its future.
And again, and Matt, thanks so much for the phone call. We do live in a fact-free environment. Our comedians have made fun of it. Stephen Colbert coined the word truthiness.
Yes.
You know, if it sounds like the truth, if you've got a gut feeling that it's the truth, for a lot of people, that's simply good enough. Let's go back to the phones. Mick in Dubuque, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my call. My question was, has the professor considered, or has he ever advised other history teachers or professors to use a reverse chronological order in teaching history to young people who may be disinterested? For example, taking a current event and then trying to trace it back to discover origins or interpretations.
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, you're absolutely right that usually history courses are taught chronologically. But I think that good teaching often does try to make connections with not only things that happened today, but things that happened throughout, sort of following themes and seeing connections between today and the past. It, of course, history exists sort of in its own right, too, but part of that relevance piece that we've talked about, making it relevant to students, is explaining to them the beginning of the course in early U.S. history. I begin by talking about, after I talk about sort of native peoples and their presence in the continent, the foods that were exchanged when Europeans arrived, because foods are something that interests people, and they don't realize that there were no tomatoes in Italy before 1492, and there are no oranges in Florida, right? And so that's a way of engaging them and seeing the way what happened 500 years ago matters in their lives today. And so you're absolutely right. That connection is one of the ways that you can get students interested in the past.
I've never stopped to think about that, but teaching in a reverse chronological order would be an interesting way to approach it.
You know,
start with the present and then start dissecting it and figure out exactly what led us to this point.
Well, the difficulty would be going back to the previous caller's question about causation, is that, or a few callers back mentioned that the importance of causation, doing that backwards is really complicated, though, which is why I think we usually go into the doing it in chronological order, because we'd have to explain causation backwards too, which is really difficult.
Let's go to June and Shauno. Junior, on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Professor. When I went to high school, I took what was called an integrated study of history and English, meaning that the two courses were taught by the same teacher together. And when my husband and I were in graduate school at UW, there were teachers who taught integrated studies of economics and history. Do you think that these programs of integrated studies are helpful for people to learn history?
I do. I think that a lot of times the way we teach is often in a vacuum by discipline. And, you know, I think that one of the ways to understand 19th century America, which is something I'm very interested in, is to look at the literature. Right. I mean, and so I think we mentioned Emerson earlier, you know, sort of looking at intellectual and literary movements of the time and trying to understand. And, you know, again, maybe there's a student out there that will pique their curiosity. So the more you can sort of give them in diversity and sort of different perspectives and different parts of the past, better chance you have of maybe lighting a spark that maybe won't pay off for decades in a student's life.
And Dan in Drummond says we should start teaching local history first. For example, in his hometown of Mellon, there have been people from the town who fought in every war and one who helped liberate an entire town in World War II. If kids knew how close to home history is, they might be more interested. And June and Shauno, thanks so much for the phone call.
Yeah, that's a great point. I believe strongly in local history. I mean, I participate. I'm a member of the board of directors of the local county historical society. And so I do think that oftentimes local stories are a way of engaging. And for instance, the Wausau district has sort of started doing that. They sort of start students at the community level and then go to the state level and then the national level and try to make those connections. And I think, again, some students, that's going to work.
All right. Let's look at the converse of that. Yeah. Instead of starting at the local level mm-hmm. and then working our way up, how about starting at the world level and working our way down? We live in a global society today. We're all interconnected. Maybe students need to know not just about American history,
right.
but world history.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to depress the listeners at the end, but that's right. I mean, we have these problems with student comprehension of our own history. But the truth is, in the world in which we live in, students have to know more than just the history. They need to know the history of this nation. We live in a world where you need to know the history of a lot of places and their background because, let's face it, we are, for good or ill, involved in the global community. And knowing a little bit about the history of places that are relevant to our lives today is yet another challenge that teachers face in the future. And you're right, that's a whole nother difficult situation.
Right, I'm going to try to squeeze in yep. one more phone call here. Let's go to Hugh in Milwaukee, who's been waiting patiently. Hugh, you're on the Joy Cardine Show with Brett Barker.
Hi. Again, I think there is a problem of political correctness. And let me go even earlier, earlier in the program. You said that it was blacks who built the White House. That may be true. But it is white men who said that there should be a White House. It is white men who said that the Capitol would be between the North and the South in what we call Washington, D.C. And unfashionable as it is today, this country started out with white men making the decisions.
All right,
Hugh,
just I can't let you go on, Hugh, because we're almost out of time, and I do want Brett Barker to
respond. What I said earlier was it's about balance. Of course, there are going to be white men included in American history because, as you said, they were critical to the earlier part. What I'm arguing for is we need to know not only the people who decided where the White House ought to be, but who built it is also a relevant fact and is important in understanding the entire history. American history is about everybody in the American past. I also agree that some people have more power than others, and therefore they're going to get paid attention to. There's no question. He's absolutely right about that.
Are there any easy fixes to this?
Get students to read. Every chance you get, try to engage students. If you go near a historical site that they might be interested in, see if they'd be interested. You know, I think that a lot of times we're trying to plant seeds that'll pay off later when students get older and they care more about their history.
And a lot of this comes down to parents and family.
Absolutely.
You've got to instill in your children the importance of a good, well-rounded education and the importance of the history of their own country.
Sometimes we think kids don't listen to us, but in fact, they often pay a lot of attention to the things we model and we care about.
We want to thank today's guest, Brett Barker, Associate Professor of History at UW-Marathon County in Wausau. You can read Brett Barker's piece on the need to change teaching methods for American history on our website, WPR.org. I'm Glenn Mobrigan for Joy Cardine this week. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this hour and Cynthia Schuster for on-air production. If you'd like a copy of this program, we can send you one. Ask for show 622A. Coming up on our 8 o'clock hour, Barry Estabrook, author of Tomato Land, How Modern Industrial Agriculture Destroyed Our Most Alluring Fruit. And in the next hour, we have two guests from opposite sides of the political spectrum debating today's big question, should we raise taxes on the rich? Right after this news.